Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're with Jeremy Beck on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right. And I'm filling in for Mike Ryan on The Mike Ryan Show. And I have two big hours coming up. First of all, the first hour, Elizabeth Hart, independent researcher of vaccines, will join me soon. And John Parsons, regular TNT radio guest, will be joining me in the second hour. Sonia Bailey, she will be joining me with a news story shortly, and she will also be on in hour number two with another news story. So a big action-packed 2 hours. First of all, let's look at a few news headlines. Former Brooklyn prosecutor cops to role in nationwide marijuana ring. In the United States, in New York, a disgraced former Brooklyn prosecutor has copped to federal charges that he helped run a nationwide marijuana distribution ring, including while he was still trying cases for the district attorney's office. The former prosecutor in question, Rami Judah, admitted in Brooklyn federal court on Thursday that he used his cell phone to help arrange for crates of marijuana to be shipped to associates in California from a New Jersey auto shop since at least 2014. Federal investigators said they caught Judah red-handed after he came on their radar during a probe and they tapped his phone in late winter 2016. Catching him doing business with his cohorts. Judah and other defendants were named in a 2019 complaint. Now, finally, Judah has been charged. And I wonder, because that's quite a long time ago. We're in 2022 now, and here we are talking about cases of suspicion in 2016. And I wonder how long this has been going on while authorities have been watching on. And, of course, here he is as a prosecutor. This is probably happening much more than we may hear in the mainstream news. And how much more? Of course, if anyone did something half as bad and it was you know, we're looking at a stage where it's double standards. I'm thinking in terms of you have people where, you know, minor misdemeanors or even doing no crime at all and getting a massive penalty, and then someone involved in more serious crimes and get a mere slap on the wrist or nothing to see here. It seems like Rami Judah is involved in drugging people up over a long course of time. It seems we're talking about a major marijuana distribution ring, quite a serious offence, and it seems more like it's been let to slide for a long time, and now it seems like the penalty doesn't seem nearly as much as what some other people have had just for free speech. Leave it there. See what you think. Another headline here, EU must take action against... EU must take action against US. Von der Leyen. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen warned on Sunday that to be able to compete with the US government-subsidized green industry, the EU must take action and step up state aid to its own companies. US President Joe Biden's investment plan under the Inflation Reduction Act could threaten the EU's industry, von der Leyen said. The Inflation Reduction Act's $738 billion spending package allocates $391 billion towards so-called green energy and climate-friendly industry projects, including $270 billion in tax incentives. So while many climate alarmist technocrats in Europe initially supported the Inflation Reduction Act, it would appear that von der Leyen now sees this as an act that threatens Europe's industry. She warned of unfair competition could close markets and thus fragment critical supply chains. And she added, we must take action to rebalance the playing field. What action, you may ask? Well, von der Leyen said the EU must increase state aid to its own industries and invest in renewable energy. Seems rather odd, seems rather strange. Free market here, no free market there, flip-flopping renewable energy. It's a mess, it's a mess. Now, one more thing is here, a news headline, Macron talks security guarantees for Russia. And I thought this was an interesting one because French President Emmanuel Macron said on Saturday that NATO should weigh in on eventual guarantees for Russia's security in the settlement of the conflict in Ukraine. Macron described his meeting with US President Joe Biden this week as a success, and he added that he and Joe Biden had begun to discuss what the peace following the ongoing conflict would look like. So I think what is important here is that Macron acknowledged Russian President Vladimir Putin's concern that NATO will deploy weapons that will threaten Russia, and said that members of the US-led alliance need to prepare to offer guarantees of the security of the Russian Federation when Moscow joins Kiev and the West at the negotiating table. So I think that's interesting to note there, because at the moment it's been all one way, but it seems like Macron is having a bet each way. Now, if you've missed your favourite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, whenever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT Radio website. We are also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
Real political talk.
Party politics is killing our government.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, Russia won't sell oil at the $60 price limit agreed by the EU and G7 nations, Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said on Sunday. Novak added that Moscow is working on mechanisms to bypass the price cap. The EU agreed to cap the price of seaborne Russian oil at $60 per barrel, or at least 5% below the market rates, the EU Council announced on Saturday. The rest of the G7 states and Australia made a similar announcement on Friday, stating that they too would refuse to handle Russian oil above $60 per barrel. Sonia Bailey, one of our news producers on TNT Radio, is here to discuss this further. Welcome, Sonia.
Hi, Jeremy. Yeah, look, this could turn into a really big mess, or it could actually be quite hilarious. I think it really depends on how Russia chooses to navigate this moving forward. As you mentioned, the European Union agreed to cap the price of Russian oil at $60 per barrel, but it seems to be that Russia doesn't agree. And the concerning part of that is that whilst Russia is effectively holding the EU over a barrel because Russia has the supply that the rest of the world want access to, it's the people that end up suffering.
Absolutely. The people are suffering so much, and all the technocrats, the military-industrial complex, those leaders, they're in their ivory towers, and most people are suffering so much in this situation. It's just so horrible to see. Now, this seems to be more of an escalation of this Ukraine-Russia war. You know, where is it going to go, Sonia? Because at the moment, we don't seem to be having any genuine negotiations for peace.
We don't seem to be, but at the same time, it also seems that there has been a sort of a plateau in the level at which the violence has actually reached. You know, when we look at where we were in February, March, and the threats that were being made and the possibilities of where this war could head, we haven't really eventuated to the worst case scenario just yet. So it really does leave it as an open-ended question as to where this now heads. of course, we're approaching Christmas, and in Russia, we're approaching the coldest part of the year. So the Russians, the Ukrainians, everybody in the surrounding nations are being affected by this ongoing conflict that's had such a knock-on effect to supply chains, to food supply, to energy supply, to gas, to oil. It really is the people on the ground that are suffering, because for the supplies that they can get, the price is going through the roof, and there are shortages on so many things for the people. And as you mentioned, it's not the people making the decisions. It's not the people in the ivory towers. It's not the government and the military that are suffering. It's the everyday citizens. And as we've already know, NATO has effectively been funding this war and continuing this war, but it would seem that they have run out of funding. So if that's the case, does this war just now fizzle out? Or is this the next phase, the next round? Is this the point at which other nations choose a side and actively get involved, where previously they had said they weren't getting involved? So there are a lot of aspects to this to really consider.
Yes. Well, it seems that NATO is running out of money in a sense. But then again, the central banks, they have all sorts of capacity to create money out of thin air. They call it quantitative easing. And the Bank of England has done it. The US Fed has done it. So you wonder what that capacity they would have there. Of course, that will lead to inflation or hyperinflation. But then again, there's another issue in terms of running out of money. And the Russian assets, which have been seized, and the NATO side seems to want to extract that money from Russian individuals. You know, they call them oligarchs, but you know, many of them are Russian business people who've just had their assets seized. And that's a way to try and extract funds to redirect them. So there are many issues there, Sonia, in terms of running out of money. How do you see it going with respect to the financial side?
Well, I think to this point, Putin has had more than enough opportunity to really escalate this into essentially a third world war that is powered with nuclear weapons. It would be quite easy for several nations around the world to simply hit a button and for it to be all out catastrophe. That hasn't happened yet. So this is where we need to look at the motivations between sort of the pros and cons of pushing those buttons and not pushing them, the pros and cons of where they stand as presidents overseeing their nations. Is, you know, Russia is typically not considered a wealthy nation as far as the citizens go. So it's interesting to see that in the wake of these decisions being made under the European Union's agreements, that Russia has now turned around and said, look, you know what, we actually don't agree. And they've stated, we will sell oil and oil products only to countries that will work with us on market conditions, even if we would have to lower production. So this is where we're not just talking about the oil and selling the oil onto other countries or having the oil handled by specific countries as it navigates its way on ships to a third country. This also affects the production that's going on within Russia. And that is far more concerning, because as soon as you begin to reduce a nation's ability to output its exports, you essentially are cutting off its legs. You're cutting off its ability to actually manufacture, to function, to produce. And this is where the production that a nation outputs really begins to affect their overall economy. The people in Russia are already suffering, and this could cripple them. But by the same token, Putin clearly has sat back and said, okay, what am I willing to concede to, and what am I not willing to budge on at all? And this is clearly something that he has said, we're not budging on this at all. We'll sell our oil at whatever price we want to whomever wants to buy it. And if people don't want to buy it for the price we're selling it, then we won't sell it.
Well, I think Russia has many options. Certainly China, the biggest, most populous country in the world with a massive economy, there's certainly a huge trade there that Russia has capacity. All the BRICS countries, for that matter, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa. I can see possibilities there. India, I mean, India's massive. India's, although it's not a massive economy, it's a rapidly growing economy. And next year, the population of India will overtake China's population. So for the future, I can see India being potentially the world's biggest economy in decades to come. I see this war in Ukraine as a very long, drawn-out process, similar to what we saw with Iraq and Afghanistan. If the NATO countries want to drag it out for years and years and years, well, Russia also has years and years and years to to prepare alternatives, alternative trading partners, and also moving away from oil, moving into, for example, nuclear power, which they're doing. How do you see that, Sonia?
Well, I definitely think that nuclear power is something that a lot of nations should really be considering. It is so much safer than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. We have options to branch out into these renewable sectors. But I think that the main concern from sort of an environmental perspective is whether these plants are being constructed and maintained in a manner that is safe ongoing. Because you can build something that's incredible, but unless you take care of it, it very quickly loses its ability to produce sufficiently. So I think that being that Europe on the whole is miles ahead of nations like ours when it comes to nuclear energy, I think they definitely have an entirely other avenue that they can go down where they essentially become far more self-sufficient, meaning that it actually won't matter if they don't export as much as they have been. And currently, Russia's trading their oil at $64 a barrel. So it's only $4 above the price cap that the European Union wants them to sit at. So I think that the next couple of months are going to be quite telling worldwide, because we are going to see a shift in the trade agreements that are happening between various different nations. And that could either build the global economy or it could completely decimate it.
Well, we're in a very interesting time, Sonia. Thanks for that report. We do need to take a break. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Steve Malzberg is talking about.
We're celebrating, and it's about 3 weeks now after the election. You feel that people spoke out, especially in the state of Oregon, where you are, voted in several candidates who support parental rights and a student-first education system and more school choice.
I think a lot of people get a little worried because, you know, maybe all the expectations that we had of this crazy huge red wave, you know, didn't get met because we didn't win the governorship, but we were able to pick up 16 of those individuals were newly elected to the Oregon legislature. And because of that, here in Oregon, we got rid of the supermajority, which in a lot of states may not sound like a big deal, but here in Oregon, that's wonderful. That no longer means that, you know, new taxes can be passed strictly by Democrats. It means that we have a chance to impact some positive changes here in the education system in the upcoming legislative session. And so we're really just trying to be super positive about those wins that we made and those candidates that are going to be, you know, pro-parents' rights, looking to help us reinstate graduation requirements, bring back open enrollment, and bring back more school choice options to the Oregon education system.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Listen. Listen up!
The listener.
Listen, we got to talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
TNT Radio has interviewed respected experts on the mismanagement of COVID-19, including the unethical and unscientific administration of mandates and the documented dangers of the jabs. Elizabeth Hart is an independent person investigating the overuse of vaccine products and conflicts of interest in vaccination policy. The ethical aspects of over-vaccination, especially mandated vaccination, are of particular interest to her. Elizabeth has a degree majoring in politics and philosophy and experience in scientific literature researching. Welcome to TNT Radio once again, Elizabeth.
Thanks very much, Jeremy. How are you?
Yeah, great. Great to have you on. And from the available evidence, Elizabeth, there is no doubt about the dangers of these jabs. I mean, it's just absolutely zero doubt. I mean, we've seen oodles and oodles of evidence. But even more worrying are the unknown longer-term dangers. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my real interest is the fact that people have been coerced into having these injections when they weren't actually originally at risk with COVID in the first place. You know, there are lots of people generally under 70 who weren't at risk with COVID. Why were they being pressured to have these COVID jabs? And what are they being set up for now with having these repeated jabs? You know, the people were told at first it was, you know, one jab, two jabs. You know, we're heading towards five now. This is a massive experiment that is happening without informed consent.
Hmm. Absolutely. And can you just take us through the concept of informed consent? Because a lot of people don't really understand it very well. I mean, we didn't really have proper informed consent, did we?
No, we didn't. And I think, you know, generally when people go to a doctor, it's usually because they've got a medical issue, a health issue. They're going for that and to get therapeutic advice on that. And what we're seeing in recent years is that we've got the rise of preventative health, that people are now being pressed to have medical interventions against problems that may never have been a problem for them, you know, such as COVID. We're seeing these mass population interventions, which, of course, are making enormous amounts of money for the pharmaceutical industry. And this is what we have to look at. You know, according to the government figures, 2 million children in Australia have been COVID jabbed. Why? Otago admit that the children aren't at risk of COVID, but they recommend that they have COVID jabs. Why did they do that? What were parents told when their children were having these jabs? Who is giving these jabs? You know, in a lot of circumstances, it's probably nurses and pharmacists and GPs. Are these people actually getting authentic, informed consent from people before giving these jabs? And I suggest they are not.
Absolutely. And why is it not appreciated by most people, particularly those who have submitted to the jab, this concept of informed consent? Most people don't seem to appreciate the importance of it.
Well, I think we're in an unprecedented situation. This has never happened before. This has been a massive scare campaign now going on for the past 3 years. We've seen it in the media. People have been really... There's been so much fear-mongering about COVID, and we've got to investigate now who is behind this. Why were they beating this up so much? To give you an idea of the figures on this, because I've been following this, as you can imagine, from the beginning. In December 2020, approximately 1.6 million deaths were attributed to COVID. This is in a world population that then was probably about 7.9 billion. And where probably around 59 million people are expected to die in a year anyway, because people die. Mm. So when you consider 1.6 million deaths, and most of these people would be elderly with comorbidities and, you know, average age of life expectancy, we've got to look at now this figure. This does not, you know, it doesn't justify this incredible response that we've seen. It's like COVID has been used as an excuse to implement these mass population injections across all ages and health status of people who weren't actually at risk with COVID. You know, they weren't at risk of hospitalization or death. And we have to question, why has this happened? It is bewildering. Now when we look back on this, this is what we need to do now, retrospective critical analysis of this situation. Why did this happen? Well, while this was going on, I was writing to the government and to Greg Hunt, who was the health minister at the time, and asking, what is this emergency? What is the actual definition of this? And I wasn't getting any answers about this. No, I've asked about the expertise of the people, these health officers. What is their actual expertise? You know, Paul Kelly is the chief medical officer. You know, what is really going on here? And we've just had no transparency. The issue has been so gravely complicated by the fact that we've had no mainstream media investigating this issue. And as I've raised on TNT radio many times before, we know that the Murdoch media is severely compromised, because a News Corp Australia is also a corporate partner with the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, which is involved in COVID vaccine research with the Doherty Institute, which put Australia into lockdown in March 2020 with the modelling that came out of the Doherty Institute. So we've got to look at this and see that, you know, the research sector is involved with the pharmaceutical industry, and what is really being created here is a massive vaccine industry. They're setting up a Moderna factory in Victoria. It's going to be putting out 100 million jabs a year. These are products that they are wanting to push onto people, and it looks like the Australian population is being set up to be exploited with these products. And yet, for most people, they weren't necessary.
Absolutely right. It's just an absolute crime, Elizabeth, what's happened. We do need to go to the news headlines now, and then we'll be right back. This is TNT Radio.
Alexa, I need some news.
I know that station.
Okay, well, I need real news, Alexa.
They are the realest.
I don't want to hear fake news.
The non-fakiest.
Okay.
Truest. Coolest. Dopest.
All right, let's hear it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. A new wave of protests has engulfed the French capital, where doctors and lab workers have walked off the job, demanding better funding. The United Nations has warned the worsening cost of living crisis is threatening to spark global unrest, and the OPEC group of oil-rich nations and its allied producers are refusing to bow down to the West, vowing only to sell oil to countries who work with Russia, not against it.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jeremy Beck back again, and my guest is Elizabeth Hart. Now, Elizabeth, we have a situation of, I think, a crime against humanity. How else can you describe it? And there are so many conflicts of interest. You've taken us through some of the issues there. The informed consent, for example, how can children give informed consent? You know, they can't consent for anything else. You know, they're kids, they don't have the mental capacity. How can it work that way?
Well, they're relying on their parents and carers in this regard. And so then it depends on the information that parents and carers are getting to make this decision. You know, we're in a situation where people are being called upon to go to health practitioners to get these injections. That's why it's very important to think about this from the old-fashioned way of going to a doctor when you were sick and getting treatment and then being informed about that treatment, that you could make your own decision about whether you want to go ahead with that treatment. Now we're getting people have been called upon to go to health practitioners to get treatments for a problem that may never have been a problem for them personally. You know, this is what we've got to look at. And so, as I said, children have been injected with these injections. They are being set up now with these injections, possibly for life. You know, it could be also interfering with their own natural immune response. It could be damaging their immune response. I'm absolutely flabbergasted that the medical profession has gone along with this. And I have been writing to the medical profession and to ARPRA for well over a year now, bringing this point up over and over again about informed consent, and that this is, this is conflicting with the government, which was the Morrison government rollout. Now it's the Albanese government rollout. That this rollout is just steamrolling over everybody and demanding that they get jabbed, and it's obviously at odds with the fact that you have to get informed consent. But we've got this very interesting situation now that I and my colleague Emma MacArthur were looking into this. She's been looking into the informed consent issue as well. And we have discovered that in 2021, the Morrison government announced to health practitioners that they were going to have a special indemnity scheme to protect them when they were giving COVID jabs. This was announced to them. It seemed to be a fait accompli. And we followed up on this. Emma MacArthur wrote a letter to Greg Hunt's office, and she said, please, could you advise to what extent the Commonwealth COVID-19 vaccine claim scheme provides insurance and indemnity for the civil and criminal liability that would arise where battery and clinical negligence occur due to a failure to obtain valid informed consent? And she got a response to this, and it then indicated that, oh, actually, there isn't a specific scheme for health practitioners after all. They are not, there is only going to be the claim scheme for people who are injured, but there isn't a specific indemnity scheme for the health practitioners. Now, this is very interesting indeed. And I followed up on this with the Albanese government. I wrote to Mark Butler's office to get clarification on this. And it has now been clarified by the Albanese government that no, there isn't a special indemnity scheme for the health practitioners. And the point has also been made, informed consent should be obtained for every COVID-19 vaccination as per usual consent procedures for other vaccinations. Now that's crucial. And in my opinion, nobody has given informed consent to this intervention because nobody's been properly informed. You know, there's all this fear-mongering. People haven't been told about their own risk in their own particular circumstances, depending on their health and age, and, you know, young people and what have you. We've got this absolutely abhorrent situation where people have been mandated to take the jabs. We've had no jab, no job. No jab, no job is still in place for many people. It's still in place for health practitioners themselves, for example. Health practitioners are people like anybody else. They should be giving informed consent to this medical intervention. And it's bewildering that they have gone along with this so willingly. You know, it actually destroys our confidence in health practitioners that they themselves have not questioned this. You know, how can we rely on these people if they're not questioning this? We have now got a very dangerous health system that is now populated by people who are compliant, who are unlikely to be whistleblowers, because they are going along with this when they should be questioning, why are people getting these jabs every few months? What is going to happen in the future? It's absolutely terrifying what is going on. And exactly. I've written to
I was just going to say that you made some important points about indemnities there granted to the vaccine manufacturers. Why was there a need to have a specific scheme for this vaccine, so-called vaccine?
Well, that's a good question. I think you find that the manufacturers are protected, and we've got to question this. Why are manufacturers being protected? That doesn't give them, you know, it kept them off the hook for these products. They shouldn't have this indemnity. If their product is so safe and effective, as we're always being told, they shouldn't have this special protection. They should be able to stand on their own without getting this indemnity from the government. But now we know that the indemnity hasn't been provided to the health practitioners. This is an area that has to be investigated. And of course, TNT Radio has been giving a voice to people like me and others to discuss this. But we need the ABC to be looking into this, to be investigating this. This is, you know, Australian taxpayer-funded organisation. What have they done to investigate any of this? It's an absolute disaster that they are not looking into this. We're 3 years into this so-called pandemic now, and it is still going on. We've still got people who are calling for people to be masked and what have you. It's just outrageous what's going on. We have to have an open and transparent discussion about this.
Well, with the ABC, it's just rather odd because you could understand commercial, you know, radio, TV, newspapers, etc. If they're receiving advertising revenue from Pfizer or Moderna, they would not want to criticise Pfizer or Moderna. It's wrong that it happens, but it does. But with respect to the ABC, that's a taxpayer-funded media outlet. They should not be pushing any agenda at all. They should be just seeking the truth, but they're not.
It should be objective. We're finding now that the governments, in my opinion, have turned rogue. They are not serving the people. They seem to be serving vested interests. The people are now being, you know, we've been treated like slaves almost, that we have to do what we're told, stay home when we're told to stay home, wear masks when we're told to wear masks. What has happened in the last few years is absolutely shocking and unbelievable. And people have gone along with it in the main because of the fear-mongering that they were told that this was such a serious disease. And they were also told you have to do this not just for the benefit of yourself, but for the benefit of others. It was sort of guilt-tripping people into this. And now people are not using their critical thinking to think there is something very odd going on here. We have not seen, you know, mountains of bodies in the streets and all this sort of thing. It's this whole thing has just been really beaten up, and we've got to look at the motives for this. It is a totally, you know, bizarre situation that has gone on. It is really a shocking situation. But I'm looking at this, I'm concentrating on very specific things, informed consent, the origins of this vaccine solution, as to why was there a vaccine solution to this in the first place when they knew it wasn't a problem for most people, and of course, conflicts of interest. That's where I'm really focusing. As I was mentioning before, I've recently written to the editor-in-chief of the British Medical Journal, which has been, you know, seen to be the doctor's journal, and to say that this is an area that this goes to the heart of medical ethics, informed consent. And when you are mandating medical interventions, that is just absolutely shocking. This should never happen in a free society. So I've written to him. Whether I'll get any response, I don't know. But that email was copied to a lot of key people internationally. And one of them is Gus Dalgleish. He's a professor of oncology at St. George's University of London. And he responded to me and Cameron Abbasi, who's the editor-in-chief of the BMJ, and he said, I fully support Elizabeth Hart. And then he went on to say that this program is no longer required, and that he's very concerned about issues in regards to cancer, with people, you know, cancers re-emerging in people after boosters and what have you. And he's saying that this is something that must be looked at, you know, immediately. And so this is another angle that is emerging on this now. You know, again, this area has been suppressed. You're well aware of the doctors that have been censored, people being cancelled on Twitter, cancelled on YouTube. We know that ARPRA has suppressed doctors, that they're not allowed to question the rollout. This is the most remarkable situation, and the general public has no idea about this stuff. If the general public knew that doctors were being shut down, were being censored, were being threatened of being struck off if they don't just shut up and do as they're told, you know, they'd be shocked, I'm sure, but they're not being told that because the media isn't telling them that. And we know the media is highly conflicted. As I've said about the Murdoch media, Nine Entertainment is the same. The chairperson of Nine Entertainment is Peter Costello, who's also the chair of the Future Fund, which is heavily invested in pharmaceutical products. We've got a massive, massive scandal here, and we haven't got mainstream media shining a light on it. You know, TNT Radio is doing a great job here.
But where's the ABC Four Corners investigation? Exactly. You know, they've done those over the years. Nothing at all. It's absolute disgrace that they're taxpayer for my money that goes to fund the ABC, and they've said nothing. In fact, that's the opposite. It's worse. They're coming out and making out that you're killing granny if you don't go and get your vaccine. Well, that's what they were doing at least. And you know, look, they're still pushing the agenda. It's mad, isn't it?
Coverage on the ABC has just been absolutely stunning. It's shocking. It's so patronising. It's just dictating to people to do as they're told. We're really living in the most bizarre times. This last 3 years, everything has flipped. I'm just reeling about what has happened, about the way that they have put in emergency laws that all of a sudden just took away any of our rights. I'm finding now, you know, with the elections, for example, the federal election, the recent Victorian election, the election we had in South Australia, as far as I'm concerned, those elections are not legitimate because the electorate was not informed. They were not making an informed decision about their vote because they weren't being informed by the media. You know, we would rely on the Fourth Estate to shine a light in dark corners. You know, there was no transparency about this COVID crisis. And so how they were going into elections not properly informed. This whole situation is so dire, and I don't understand. I don't know how we can turn it around because it seems so many of our institutions have been taken over in this, in that they are not being accountable, not being transparent. We're not getting accountability. You're not living in a free society when you're not getting transparency and accountability.
Mm. Absolutely. And now we have the situation, so many people are getting injured and severely injured or dying, and record numbers of deaths in terms of the excess mortality. It cannot be denied. The official figures are coming out in numerous countries, the death rate's going through the roof. And now I think, from my understanding, people could be sued. Now, there are some amazing legal ramifications here. Patients could potentially sue their doctors. I don't know where this is going to go. What do you think the current situation is there in terms of the legal situation?
I think we're in just very uncharted territory at the moment. The courts have so far not been helpful at all, because I think the courts will follow the dominant narrative. We've got the government, we've got the scientific and medical establishment are setting this COVID narrative. There isn't any transparency and accountability. So it's difficult to see the courts going against that. You know, as far as I'm concerned at the moment, it just seems to me pointless to be going to the courts, in that this needs to be fought in the court of public opinion first, that this has to be exposed to the public, because the public doesn't know about this. That's what needs to happen. So how do we get that happening? You know, say TNT Radio are publishing, but you know, there are so many people who don't hear about this sort of stuff. And it has to be come out on, you know, the ABC is where we need to have this fought out. But we're not getting this. How do we get that?
Mm. Well, we're TNT Radio getting a huge reach now, and we're rapidly growing, and we need to grow faster. So all listeners, spread the word out there and tell your friends and neighbours and family to listen to TNT Radio, because I think alternative media is really the only way that we're going to break through. The mainstream media, they won't change their stripes. They're pushing their agendas. They're funded. There's conflicts of interest. You know, it's just horrible what they've done to us. But TNT Radio, what we're doing, I tell you what, we are in the battle, the biggest battle of our lifetimes. We do need to take a break right now, Elizabeth. This is TNT Radio.
Apple CEO Tim Cook says China's values align completely with Apple's values on climate. Oh my.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Apple CEO Tim Cook in 2017.
In the environmental leadership today, is very clear, and it aligns completely with Apple's values.
The Chinese environmental leaders,
yes,
the government.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very fixated on doing the right things to avert climate change.
Yes, so the next time you use your Apple iPhone or MacBook, you can praise Apple as aligning itself with China. Cook even praised China for lifting people out of poverty and saying they should be applauded for that. This is all part of the Great Reset. The once free West is now modeling itself after one party authoritarian rule in China. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Emergency, police, fire, or ambulance?
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Police, fire, or ambulance?
I can see a whole lot of smoke.
What town are you calling from?
I'm on a mobile phone.
I need the town.
Yes, there it is. I can see flames. There appears to be a kid or something at the window.
It's okay.
You guys are better out. This is serious.
Hello?
000's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. If you stay focused and just answer the prompted questions, you'll get help faster.
Are we on the air?
Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
On the air 24/7. Your news talk giant, TNT.
Jeremy back again, and my guest is Elizabeth Hart. Now, Elizabeth, I mentioned before about the legal situations, and you responded in terms of the court of public opinion. But in terms of getting back to the legal question, if patients end up suing doctors, where's that going to go? And what is the position of APRA on this?
Well, that's what we have to investigate. This is something that's just unfolding now. As I've said, I've written to doctors' organisations and APRA for some time. I've also now following up medical insurers. And what I'm finding, they simply refuse to respond. You know, I've got a letter out of APRA last year where they were confirming that practitioners had to get informed consent. They confirmed that. But at the same time, they're also saying that health practitioners shouldn't challenge the rollout. The whole thing is a conflicted, shambolic mess. And ARPA is at the heart of it, like what is going on with ARPA. But also these professional organisations, the doctors' professional organisations, like the AMA. You know, Omar Khorshid was the previous president, and he's a knee and hip doctor. He was out there saying everybody had to be vaccinated and immunised. This guy, he has no idea about vaccines and viruses and what have you. He's a knee and hip doctor. So we've got people outside their area of expertise making these demands, and they're not being accountable. This is what we've got to look at. I've written to the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, Karen Price, I think is the current president. No answer. I brought to her attention about the children's vaccinations. No answer. This is so incredibly serious. These are the professional organisations representing the profession. I'm also going after the Royal Australian College, Australasian College of Physicians. You know, they simply will not engage with this. And yet this is about the ethics of their profession. People are being mandated to have medical interventions. I can't emphasize how shocking that is. That should never happen in a free country. People should be making their own informed decision about what happens to their own body. And we're talking about also adverse events after the injections, which of course are extremely serious. But you know what? Even if there were no adverse events after these injections, they would be the most potent weapon ever used against the population, because they are stealing people's personal autonomy and bodily integrity. If you haven't got that, you haven't got anything. And that's what we've got to fight back on and defend. But so many people now, this has been stolen from them because they were jabbed under mandates. And people like Daniel Andrews and Mark McGowan and other premiers around Australia have got to be brought to account to this. They bullied and coerced people into taking these jabs and would not provide the evidence. It is the most disgusting and disgraceful period in Australian history. And this has got to be now analysed and exposed. It's an absolutely shocking situation.
And you have Dan Andrews, who's just got back in. Now, whether or not there was vote fraud or whatever, the point you made before I think is the most valid thing, is the population weren't given the appropriate evidence to have an informed vote, because the mainstream media weren't telling them the dangers of the jabs. They weren't telling them all the crimes of Dan Andrews. It was all glossed over. But in terms of Dan Andrews, he's doubling back down on the agenda. He said in his victory speech that, people didn't like what I was doing. I'm just paraphrasing him. But we had to do the right thing. And is digging his heels in, saying that we made difficult choices, we did the right thing, not what was popular. Now, it made me sick listening to this nonsense. So they don't even admit that they've done wrong. How can we get past this, Elizabeth?
I don't know. I'm just basically winging it at the moment, writing these people, trying to get accountability. And I say, going international on this, as I've said on TNT Radio before, I'm looking at the UK as being a major player in this. They got this vaccine response off the ground. And the question now, we have to go back to the beginning and say, why was there a vaccine response to this supposed disease? You know, this respiratory disease. Why was there a vaccine response when you knew from the beginning it wasn't a problem for most people? How on earth have we gotten to this situation where there's the plan to jab the entire world population? It seems that this isn't really about a virus. This is about control, about making people compliant to medical interventions on demand, about imposing digital ID. This is the bigger picture that's going on. Social credit systems. This is what we need to look at. But we've now got a situation with the government. The state and federal government seem to be our enemy. They're not being accountable to the people. They're not being a servant of the people. They are now adopting the position of master of the people. And people have been sucked into this because of the fear. That's what's happened. And how do we get this exposed now? This is the serious issue, that we have an uninformed population. This concept of informed consent is something that I'm now getting very interested in. It's not just about medical interventions. It's about life generally. It's about giving informed consent to things, and that we have been told a tissue of lies about so much stuff, and that we need to push back on this now. These individuals, we have to go after these particular individuals like Andrews, and other people like Malinowskis in South Australia. These are the premiers. These are the people making these impositions. Well, we now have to call them to account and say, on what basis are these things being imposed? There are still jab mandates in place for a lot of people, for companies. Why? On what basis were these mandates ever put in place in the first place? I'm hearing that even sporting organisations are demanding that children have to be jabbed to participate in sport overseas. On what basis? Who are these people to be dictating to others about having medical interventions? It's appalling.
How should patients be responding to governments urging them to get these boosters?
Well, this is an interesting word, patient. This is something I'd like to look into as well. A patient, in my view, is somebody who's going to a doctor for a health issue. But if you're not sick and you don't need this injection, are you a patient at all? We've got this situation where people are being called upon to go to a health practitioner and have this intervention. But why? Why in their individual circumstance? And when they do front up, because they have been called upon by the relentless advertising and pressure from people like health officers like Nicola Spurrier in South Australia, insisting that these are necessary and safe and effective and all of this sort of stuff. You know, why is this happening? This shouldn't be happening. They've been put in this position. And then you have the health practitioner there giving the jab. But why are they should be, they themselves should be asking, why am I giving this medical intervention? Or what is the basis for this? They just seem to be just doing this as they are told. But they do they realise their own responsibility here ethically, that they are injecting a needle into somebody's arm? Why are they doing that? And they will have no idea of the future consequences, because this is an experiment that's currently underway. We can see this unfolding. People were told two injections in the first place, and now every few months have been told to have another injection. This is astonishing what is happening. And it is more astonishing that more people aren't rearing up and questioning what on earth is going on. And what are these injections going to be doing to people? And very significantly, what are they going to be doing to children? It seems that they want people to have had at least two jabs to prove their compliance. This isn't about protecting from some disease. This is about proving compliance. You can see this in the US. The US still has it in place that foreigners have to have two injections to get into the country. And yet Americans can go in. This is totally not about a virus. This is about making people compliant. It's extremely sinister. This is an extremely serious political situation. And that's why my website is called vaccinationispolitical.net, because this is political. This is power. This is control. This is about intruding on people's bodies. And and if these things go wrong, it's these people, it's the people themselves who are going to be left with consequences.
Can you just say that website again, Elizabeth?
Vaccinationispolitical.net.
Vaccinationispolitical.net. Certainly recommend you see that, viewers, listeners, because, you know, this is, the information has to get out there. I mean, we're at a stage in history where people need to know the truth. And your site has got some excellent material. I've seen it before. And right now, doctors should know better. Doctors, they've seen the signs. They've seen the people coming in with chest complaints, myocarditis, pericarditis, all these things. Nurses, they should know better. I mean, should not have these doctors and nurses been alarmed in the first place by these indemnity, you know, these waivers to Big Pharma? Shouldn't have they been alarmed in the first place?
They should have been. And what's very sinister is that, you know, when it was announced that they would have indemnity, it seems like they were happy to go along with this when they thought they had indemnity. And that makes you question, what wouldn't these people do if they think they've got indemnity? Think about that. They should have been questioning what's behind these injections. It seems they've all been just taken in by this whole thing, but the critical thinking has disappeared. The medical profession themselves should have been questioning, does this justify what's going on here? The most stunning example is children. Most stunning example. Anybody, any doctor or health practitioner who looked at the ATAGI advice should have questioned straight away. ATAGI is acknowledging that children are at low risk. Why are they being jabbed? I have written to the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. I've forwarded them the letter that I sent to the chair of ATAGI questioning this. No response. Can you believe what is going on? It's incredible to me. And now, according to the government's figures, 2 million children have been jabbed. They've been given at least two doses. What is the point of those two doses now that apparently last 5 minutes? What was the point of them ever getting this when their own immune system was inadequate to deal with whatever threat was coming forward to them? Now, what has it done to them to have those injections, these mRNA? What has it done to them? We don't know. You know, We don't know what lies ahead for them now. This should never have happened. And it's because this system, it has been just so corrupted that people are not challenging things because they have been made to be compliant. And with ARPRA threatening the medical practitioners or health practitioners that you can't challenge the rollout or you'll be in trouble. You could be struck off.
It's a shocking state of affairs. We've got less than a minute left. Just a final thought. How are we going to get out of this mess, Elizabeth?
Well, we've just got to plow on. I mean, what I'm doing is just seeking accountability all the time, you know, with writing these letters and what have you. The fact that Gus Dalgliesh has spoken out about his concerns about the cancer issue is very significant. And I think that should be getting some traction, the fact that he's out there, because that's had some coverage on the Daily Skeptic website and also the Conservative Woman website has been taken up. And as I said, I've got a lot of people copied on these emails, key people like Neil Ferguson, Patrick Vallance, Norman Fenton, a range of people across the board here.
You've done some excellent work, Elizabeth. We've run out of time. Great to have you, Elizabeth Hart. Thanks very much for joining TNT Radio once again. And we're up for the news in a few seconds.